phenomenology. Mbani sister Sarah Catherine's 16 Manners of Being. Curio was a very fortunate young humpy. Before he passed on, his father had built the coziest of bungalows for the family. It was so rich in home flavor that it became a favorite place for travelers to stop, whether readying to journey westward over the snowy high pass or venturing through the forest valley to the east. Guests would often captivate Curio with pictures they'd bring from far-off places they'd been, ports, villages, castles, fortresses, temples, and all kinds of other fascinating wonders from around the world. The images were lithographs, etchings, sketches and watercolors, and low-worn, were often given to Curio's mother in trade for room and board. These artworks impressed Curio so greatly that he'd open his eyes wide with wonder. Guests called him the lad with eyes of awe. Studying the pictures, Curio would literally respond to their attraction, for they could take him deep into dark forests where unknown monsters lurked, or he'd find himself sitting by a secret pond where, when he looked hard enough, saw reflections of mermaids, fairies and sprites that dwelt there. The visitors themselves were an interesting assortment. A bronze-skinned prince from the kingdom of Asherland, sages seeking yet to find answers, artists, a poet troubadour, and a pygmy from the jungle with his lady giant from the Gobi Desert. Both the visitors and their pictures made Curio's education rich and unending. He and his mother treasured their guests and the oh-so-special pictures left for them. When every inch of wall space was filled and no room was left, they began placing the pictures into albums. For the covers, they glued on intricately beaded weavings, pendants, trinkets, and special shells, all from lands far, far away, and all to make exciting introductions to travels to those distant places. Curio liked one of the guests especially. He was an easy-to-know, simple-hooded monk named Ammon, who rode a small burro and carried only a tattered book for his notations. He carried no weapon of any kind, so Curio asked him, "Ammon, don't most travelers have some kind of protection while traveling the dangerous trails over the high mountain ranges?" The answer was simple: it becomes too easy to let a weapon become your answer to problems that arise. I learned this when I studied at the Temple of the Three Towers, a place where any answer can be found. It is built on one of the high peaks near the Mountain of Pure Thought, and the temple's towers are close to heaven itself. "Could I go there?" Curio asked. "No one is refused, my young friend. But it helps to have an open heart for learning. Here, I will give you a drawing of it, to remind you of its grace." How true that was, for every time Curio or his mother looked at the drawing, they noticed it had a mist about it and the hooded figures seemed to move slowly along the temple's walkways. Both Curio and his mother could hear the ringing of hand chimes with chanting drifting through the air. Curio's mother often commented, "There is much more intrigue within an artwork than what first meets the eye. I marvel at the depth of these works and at our good fortune to experience them." Just a few days after these valued insights, while the two were adjusting the hanging wire on the back of a painting called "The Walk Through God's Garden," Curio's mother noticed an envelope wedged between the canvas and its stretcher. Reading the title "Phenomenology" on its front side, Curio's mother opened the envelope with care, as if it were a very special gift. The notations inside were meticulously written in an ancient script and printed on fabric like paper. "Respectfully," she said, "it says it is a detailed dissertation about a method by which one may experience an artwork more fully." "Well, imagine that!" exclamation mark. No sooner do we take pleasure in looking more carefully at the monk's temple, than we find a way to see even deeper into it, or any artwork. Curio asked excitedly, "How does it work?" "It is explained in detail here. I'll read it to you." She cleared her throat and began. "There are four levels to analyzing and experiencing an artwork fully. The first level is called the sensuous surface. One is to clear the mind of all things and attend only to the non-objective sensations, giving the artwork its basic elements, line, shape, dimension, value, color, texture, movement, and overall composition. All these are part of the painting's expression, and at this level tell the story with only vague sensations identified and experienced." As if for the first time, They looked at the painting 8 walk through God's garden and both studied only the painting's surface. The lines and their movements swayed and caressed their senses. This is fun. By not trying to see more, and just feeling the painting, I sense a rhythm in the strokes and I hear subtle melodic chords in the colors. Taking away all extraneous thoughts, they both joined in, gliding lightly along with the whole painting's surface. Neither had sensed before. The sensations and entrancing soft hues. They both calmly said. At once, how fascinating to experience the visual in this way. After a few moments and with Curio's complete attention. His mother continued, the second level of phenomenology is called the representational level. It requires one to read in a tutored manner and describe aloud all the elements that identify the objects, their environment, and the activities they create. Now they both looked at the painting as words of depiction. Their eyes started in the lower right-hand corner where Curio saw two people strolling together along a path that guided them through the shrubs, pinons, and pines that blanketed the garden's gentle hills. In the distance, the towering sandstone pillars seemed to reach up as if they were trying to touch the clouds. Curio smiled, "I'm sure those two in God's garden are enjoying their walk." His mother nodded and smiled. She continued, "The third level is a symbolic level. It discerns the message, the reason for the artwork's existence. It is the symbolic nature of the work that tells the story of the work, and its meaning and its purpose to the receiver." Curio's mother exclaimed, "Now I've become involved in the painting instead of just witnessing it. I am one of the two figures walking along the winding pathway as it guides the way. The foliage adds its show of abundance and variety of life." Curio could not help but pay particular interest to the towering rock spires. They appear to be like organ pipes, and the cliffs behind appear as an altar, and when I include the clouds, I see wisps of angels joining in the wondrous and spirited ceremony of this special garden. Yes, yes. Both Curio and his mother could see the grand symbolism of it all. Curio's mother continued, "The fourth level of phenomenology is the total expression, the overall effect upon the viewer. In short, the formula for the coming together of all levels is SS plus Rep dot L plus Sim dot L equals TE plus. The total of the three makes the fourth level. And it becomes more than the sum of its parts, revealing the complete experience. The plus sign is the continuing effect of the experience." "My, my," Curio exclaimed, "how grand it is for us to experience this painting in such a manner. When I put myself in the painting, I realize the other figure who walks with me. It is the artist himself who is desirous to share his feelings of intense communion with nature while painting this personal scene." Curio's mother added, "and I sensed the original collaboration between nature and the designer as a joyful sharing." Both Curio and his mother agreed, "This phenomenology has taught us much." From that time on, they no longer looked at art with a casual glance. Rather, they opened all their senses to every part of the experience. And just as Curio heard the chimes playing from the monk's temple, he could hear musical phrases often accompanying other artworks. Dash, 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 dash. Sadly, not long after the two had shared this elevated way of experiencing art, Curio's mother passed away. But she had readied for her death by corresponding with her closest friend, a sage named Bonnie Sister Sarah Catherine, asking her to help Curio complete his early stages of wisdom. A final note to Curio from his mother ended with, "Son, you will appreciate her for she is like her name. She is called Bonnie, because of her gracious smile and inner beauty, Sister because of her dedication to the spiritual aspects of life, Sarah for her most dear and caring mother, and Catherine for the saint of manners of love. And because of your acquaintance with her from previous visits, I know you will work well together." When Sister Bonbright came to stay, the first few days were casual, but soon Curio was anxious to tell his new tutor about the travel adventures he had been on by studying the artworks of other worlds and how he could find himself in those faraway places and yet still be at home in the bungalow. Bonbright said curio, few know of or have learned to apply your learning in how to experience an artwork so magnified. Perhaps soon you'll let me share with you how to get more from life itself by using a very similar manner of experiencing. Over the days, Bonnie's sister Sarah Catherine patiently listened to Curio tell how phenomenology worked in its wondrous way by using the four levels to experience art and nature. They would go on walks outside and apply Curio's phenomenology on scenes they liked. Dash, 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 dash. Finally, Miss Bonbright could not hold back her enthusiasm about her manners of being any longer. Just as you have enriched art, now let's enrich life. Curio heartily agreed and she began, Curio, I truly love the wonders of phenomenology. A marvelous way to see, hear, understand and appreciate manners of experience. Let's continue to practice it often. But now, I'd like to begin to teach you about what I call 4, 16, manners of being. I will number them, starting with the number 1, of awakening, and ending in an afterglow, number 16. You'll see the sense of it later. Tilde. Curio, the first quality, or virtue, of the 4, 16, manners of being is called awakening the senses, and it's much like the first level, what you call the sensuous surface, in your phenomenology. Let's start with the first sense to be felt at the beginning of life, that of touch. 1. Imagine yourself as a newborn and how it feels in the warmth and tender comfort of your mother's arms all wrapped about you and her loving caresses upon your cheek. Then as she gently rocks you, the motion soothes your being and you hear her voice filled with love going straight into your heart. 2. Imagine learning these sensations presented in your introduction to life as continued in childhood as a way of living, and the rewards gotten because of your positive responses. Well, one good act begets another. 3. Having senses open and alert to take in the world and absorb the riches constantly offered you, it will change your whole life, all the way up to the end. 4. And think of the effect you have on others. Even at death, the feeling received from the sensuous surface plays a role. Then as you lay on your deathbed, it is as you began. You feel someone caringly holding your hand and sense that touch being love from above passing through you, and perhaps you'll hear angels it singing to you will be comforting as you pass. So my whole live will have the first, sensual manner of being. Yes indeed, along with the other 3. Tilde. The second manner of being deals with a comprehension of what you are experiencing. A painter is visiting tomorrow. He wants you to go out and paint with him. His name is Roccolo, a painter who has done over 1,000 paintings of landscapes. Yet he treats each one as new. In no time at all they found an exciting scene, almost a world of its own, just waiting to be captured by them. As did Roccolo, Curio set up his easel and made his paints ready. But, don't paint yet, Curio. First you must soak it in and get to know the scene. 5. You must open up all your senses to it, and especially listen to what it says to you. So they both just sat quietly and listened intently. 6. Roccolo said, getting to know the scene and experiencing it as if it is talking or singing to you helps you capture the whole experience. 7. Learn how all its parts work together. See the stone wall there by the edge of the path. The stones were laid to rhythmically flow with the wall's surroundings. And the vegetable garden, its planted rows following contours of the land. The rolled thatched rooftops matched the clouds, and it all looked as if they were composed to fit a musical score, don't they? Even the movement of the tree shadows seemed to dance along the path. Curio noticed wherever he looked, the harmonious patterns helped him hear the scene's heartbeat and the song it was singing. 8. Now paint. Paint with all you've got. Towards sundown, Curio and Roccolo were exhausted. Finally, they gave thanks to the scene and felt blessed by what they had experienced. On the way home, Roccolo commented on Curio's painting. Today's schooling in the art of painting shows that you have a bit of mastering to do, but you are young yet. Learning the skill of any art requires much work. Just as doing well in any endeavor, you need to know how, especially when expressing yourself. It is time for me to return to my home. Roccolo looked over to Bonnie's sister Sarah Catherine, winked and said, but, I must say, the lad does show promise. I can tell he is learning to listen well. Tilda. The next day Bonbright said, "Now it's your turn to tell me a story, Curio. Tell me about symbolism and appreciation found in level 3. Of phenomenology," Curio began, "it is the most rewarding level of all. Why else would nature create such magnificent landscape scenes or make the smiles of child so contagious? If not to be appreciated? It is appreciation that makes me feel more alive." 9. Bonnie's, Curio's, Author's Number 9, and I do have a story to tell you of how I learned of feeling so good. When I was 12, I was an apprentice to a stonemason named Brooke. I felt honored to be his helper, for he was a true artist at his trade. He said stonemasonry is often prejudged as nothing more than hard, tedious work with little reward and little pay. 10. Soon you'll feel differently, once you get into it, he said. Yes, this work demands extreme effort and learning, but it also requires a constant sensitivity and skill, and a passion. Much like the attention I give to the violin I play for relaxation. It is true, rock masonry pays little, but I do it for even less, for it calls in me a creative passion, even a love. That's why few have mastered it. 11. Brooke showed me how to use caring while chiseling a rock to fit. Think of it as a friend that has unique strength and character. You must chisel away only its unwanted distortions, so that its moss face and form add to its character to become part of the structure. And for the joints between the rocks, they should have close to the same width and depth but not be stiff. You still want to flow and rid to the composition throughout. 12. He and I sculpted the entire bridge that summer, all of it in this manner. We both took pride in its beauty, strength, function and ageless value. I felt an appreciation for hard work, and tremendous pride in what we had made as well. Bonnie's sister Sarah Catherine said, "It seems, Curio, as if you have applied your phenomenology in appreciating creating this bridge with heart and soul. I commend you." Tilda. After a few days of rest and contemplation, Curio and Miss Bonnie inspired each other to use both phenomenology and manners of being to experiencing to the heights of their wand. It was Bonnie's turn to tell a story of the total expression, phenomenology, and creativity, manner of being. Miss Bonbright began, "Creating is the manner of being that brings out the you in you. For creating comes from the most inner part of the self that makes each of us so special as to be one of a kind. Imagine that. Each and every one of us, troll or wizard, genius or dolt, young critter or an ancient one giving out one last blessing, all are made special for a reason. Dash. My story for you, Curio, was told to me by Calideo the seer, and it is a great example of one's finding oneself." Sure enough, no sooner had Bonnie's sister Sarah Catherine thought of the story, when, on cue, Calideo appeared at the bungalow door. After several hellos, Bonbright said, "I was just about to tell your story, but it is your experience, so go ahead and tell it to Curio." Galileo began, "I'd like to do so, for the story has to do with returning a good deed that a little girl did for me. She helped me see the whole world of design with just my one good eye. But that's another story." So Galileo began, "May this story put you at ease when thinking about your future." Curio settled in with a smile. "During a long, overdue ride in the countryside in my once ostentatious rig, I passed a hunched-over elderly man struggling to lead his horse by the halter. I was curious and stopped to ask, 'Would it not be easier and faster for you to ride your fine horse?' The man replied, 'Oh yes, sir, Clydestine loves to run, but his back is injured, and he cannot carry my weight. Indeed, 'tis a shame for us both.' The horse nodded in agreement and the two began to trudge onward again. For some reason, I could not go on my way just yet. I called to him, 'What is your name?' He turned and replied, 'I am Obidia.' With a fresh idea stirring in my head, I asked, 'Well, Obidia, what do you think of my rig?' He gleamed and replied, 13, 'Tis a fine carriage indeed, sir. Since I was a young lad I have dreamed of driving such a rig. But if I might be so bold, it desperately needs attentive caring. The wood is dried from lack of tung oil, its brass is tarnished, and its springs are sprung. I'd gladly work on it if you wish.' My eyes must have surely sparkled as I answered, 'Obidia, Never you mind working on it for me. It is yours. Rather than pulling this old rig, my horse would much prefer I ride her. And your horse, though you cannot ride him, could easily pull this buggy. Both horses whinnied and nodded in delight, and the switch was made. I saw then and there Obadiah become a new man. After many thank yous, he and Clydesdene and the carriage hurried home to begin renewing themselves. Each wanted to be of good service. 14. With great care, Obadiah labored over the carriage royale, as it wanted to be called. He polished its brass, upholstered the seats with velvet, and hung gold tassels from the bases of its elegant gas lamps. Then he hurried Clydesdene's coat until it glowed like an opal. He combed his long mane and tail so they'd wave in the breeze, and then he plumed the bridle with long white tassels. At last, Obadiah donned his own suit with tails and top hat so he would become the cabby topper special. 15. What a grand trio they made, the carriage royal, Sir Clydesdene, and the dapper cabby topper. Their presentation alone made the entire town take pride. For the lovers, the cabby topper special gave evening rides under the moon. Obadiah would turn the lanterns down and soften the jingle bells just so, to accompany the clippity-clop of Clydesdene's hooves on the cobblestone. And the carriage royal would sway gently to and fro as if dancing. For emergencies, Clydesdene would run like the wind, and Obadiah would loosen the reins around his neck and grab his hat with one hand and squeeze the alarm horn with the other to clear the way ahead. When it was the children's turn to ride, they would honk the horn and jingle the bells for no reason in particular. The reins flapped and waggled on their own, so Clydesdene could go anywhere he pleased. Over ruts and ridges they swerved, swaying the laughing children cattywampus, to and fro. He knew the biggest bumps to ride over, just for the children to bounce as high as they wished. Afterglow? 16. All in all, the happy trio, the carriage, the horse, and Obadiah, were in their glory day and night, and, when at rest, each of the three could hardly wait for what service they would next render. Having caught every word of Kalidio's story, Curio said, "Thank you, sir. Just like Obadiah, I will know when I have found my calling, it will happen." Lydia replied, "Yes, you will know what you are made for. In the meantime, do your best with all of your ideas and all your endeavors, my friend." Bonnie Sister Catherine spoke in a sure tone, "Curio, be yourself, and one day without forcing it, when you can answer these four questions, both for your phenomenology and for my manners of being. 1. What is my calling? 2. How do I do it artistically? 3. Why should I do it? What is its value? And lastly, 4. So, what is the effect? Its contribution to life? Another set of numbers." Bond Wright, as Curio now called her, said smilingly, "So, there we have your phenomenology and the 16 manners of being. Both are alive and well and wanting to share. And, Curio, do you realize all of these glorious blessings can be put into one manner of being? In one word, it is." Then Curio triumphantly interjected, "Yes, it is. It is a fine and beautifully graced word. Love." Then Curio added, "I remember now. What am in the hooded monk told me. Love, in any form of expression, does not exist until you let it come into you. To experience it. But once it is in you, this love will absorb goodness and awaken your mind and heart to its presence. Help you comprehend its nature. By letting its light shine for you on your understanding, in your mind and heart and in your spirit too. Give value to the essence of your being. And flood your spirit with beauty, blessing. Your soul with wholeness and purpose. Help you share yourself through your manners of being to the spirits of others, through their trials and sorrows so they too may sing along with its divine song. Then love not only exists, it is and always will be, the heart of experience." "Amen," Bond Bright said. "Amen," said Curio,